Well, sometimes a household income drops because of a job layoff. Sometimes it's an illness. Maybe it's a death, possibly divorce. And, of course, when one of those things happen, it's natural to be shocked and sometimes panicked. Maybe you want to ignore the situation. I know that happens as well. Those are some of the kinds of things that happen. And Michael Collins is with us to kind of talk about that today. He's an Extension Family Living Consumer Economics Specialist in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. Really pleased to have him with us to talk about managing your personal finances in these tough economic times. And certainly, if you'd like to join in, maybe you've got an experience to share, maybe a question, I hope you do. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Can also email us. I believe we got our email working here. Yeah, our email's working. There's an email at talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. If you don't want to be on the phone, just want to email, you can do that as well. Michael Collins, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
Talk a little bit about your own background and your primary areas of expertise.
Well, I come at the consumer financial issues from a variety of backgrounds, actually. I've some background in economics, some background in psychology. Also, as a practitioner, I worked for about a decade working with lenders and with nonprofits around financial counseling and mortgage lending. So a lot of different ways I come at these issues. And, you know, I think my primary interest is in how people make decisions under sometimes very tough situations on financial topics.
Yeah. And regardless if it's a divorce or death or what are some of the best things you can do to manage your expenses when the worst happens?
Well, I think the advice that I can give and the advice that I hear lots of experts giving these days is write it down. You know, the best thing you can do is help yourself feel like you're in control. And one of the best ways to feel like you're in control is to write down what you're spending your money on, what you're getting in terms of income, and try to figure out just how bad things are. You know, maybe it's not as bad as you think. Maybe, you know, a few little tweaks here and there can make things feel a lot better for you.
And it's sometimes hard to talk about financial affairs. I mean, I even have sometimes even with my own wife, you know, we'll have, there are times when I want to talk about it or times when I don't. And same with for her. It's hard to talk about these financial affairs, but I guess it's pretty important to talk with the family and try to avoid the arguing and the blame.
That's right. I mean, at this point, there's no point in placing blame because the issue is already in play. You've got to figure out now how you're going to deal with it, and you're going to have to deal with it as a family, regardless of who you might think might be the culprit. Yeah. It's a difficult conversation, probably one of the ones that people least want to have, but that's an important first step.
What about paying credit card bills? You know, when you've got – what should you do if you can't pay your cards?
Well, the first thing I always recommend to people is look closely at what exactly they're expected to pay. You know, usually there's at least a minimum payment. Hopefully you can make that. Figure out what your fees are going to be if you're late in paying or if you make a partial payment. Try to figure that out. Once you get a grip on all that, call your creditor. Call the lender and tell them what your situation is. This is what people delay until too long. If you wait several months and then call, then you're way behind the eight ball and it's a lot harder to try to find a solution. So get yourself organized and call the creditor and try to figure out what you can do.
Are they usually willing? I mean, can you actually make deals with a MasterCard or a Visa or whatever?
More than you might think. You know, they're not fun to deal with by any means. You can plan on being on hold for a while, and you can plan on some less than polite people to work with. But if you've been a long-time customer, they'll do things like waive fees. They'll talk to you about making partial payments or about the minimum or coming up with a plan to try to deal with whatever problem you're having, especially if you can show them it's a relatively temporary problem that you expect to get through in some point in time.
Michael Collins, our guest today, as we talk about managing your personal finances in these economic times, give us a call with your question at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. What about financial counselors, reputable financial counselors? In the first place, you know, if you're short of money anyway, you're going to be paying us to pay somebody. Seems like, oh, can I afford to do that?
Well, it's a really, I'm glad you raised this question or this point. There are unfortunately a rising number of so-called experts out there who want to help you in this situation. And they're helping you by trying to collect money from you. And I think that it's an important issue for people to be careful of. Anybody who says, I can solve all your problems, I can make your foreclosure go away, I can save you from financial distress, you want to be pretty cautious about. The best organizations out there are nonprofit organizations. And among the nonprofits, there are a subset that are affiliated with the National Foundation for Consumer Credit, NFCC. They have a website called debtadvice.org. All those agencies are certified by NFCC, and their staff have been trained in the techniques of credit counseling. Many of them do not charge a fee, especially for the first few counseling sessions, unless they're doing something substantive for you, like managing your bills for you or something else. So you can definitely explore those kinds of services. You want to ask a lot of questions. Check them out. Google them. You know, make some calls and try to figure out if it's fair or not. But if anybody wants a check up front or is making promises you think they can't uphold, then be very cautious.
I've heard ads on television and commercial radio as well, where they'll people are saying, "Oh, I went from all this debt to having no debt, my bills were taken care of." And it sounds really too good to be true.
And it oftentimes is. And oftentimes, you know, it is true that those people got their debt relieved or they figured out some solutions, but it's probably nothing they couldn't have done on their own or with the help of a free or low-cost counseling service. So the additional value you get from some of those kinds of services is oftentimes pretty minimal. And as you say, these are tough times. You know, why would you want to fork out even more money for something like that?
Well, Forrest in Milwaukee has a question or comment, so let's turn to Forrest. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I'm calling regarding the Cash for Clunkers program. My car does qualify, and I am due for a new car, but at the same time, I don't have enough capital built up, so I'd need to take on financing. Is it worth it to take on interest to take advantage of this program?
It's a great question. You know, the first thing I think about Cash for Clunkers you got to ask yourself is, what would your car be worth as a trade-in alone? And, you know, the most you're going to get from that program is $4,500. And if your trade-in value is pretty close, you know, this may not be worth it for you. You're only gonna, you know, the only difference between the rebate and what your car is worth might be, $1,000 or less. It may not be worth doing. But if it's true that your car really is a clunker and that doesn't have much value as a trade-in, you know, this really could be a pretty good discount off the price. You know, ideally you would be able to find some form of financing that wasn't very costly. So some dealers and some manufacturers are offering lower cost financing right now. If your credit's not that good and you're not going to qualify for that good of a financing, you know, you may be better off actually not using Cash for Clunkers, doing the trade-in or trying to sell your car in the private market and buying a used car, and then you're out less money and don't have to borrow as much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. So, some things to consider there. If I've got a car it's about worth about $4,000.
That's right.
So
you probably aren't a good candidate.
No, I wouldn't be a good candidate for it. Michelle in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I'm calling because my parents made a really bad financial decision, got into a home that they really can't afford. And their plan at the time was that they would sell it in a couple of years and make a profit, just endure it in order to enjoy living there for a few years. My dad's retired. My mom is approaching retirement. They simply can't afford the mortgage payments, and now the house is not worth as much as they owe on it. So they are really unsure about what to do.
And they can't make and they're not able to make the payments right now.
No, they are making the payments, but it's taking every last dime that they have to make the payment, and the house is, like I said, not worth as much as they owe on it now.
Yeah, is it a fixed mortgage that they have or a variable?
It's a fixed.
All right. What do you think, Michael?
Well, this is a unfortunately a pretty common occurrence this day. I mean, we estimate there's several million people in similar shoes right now where they owe more than their house is worth. You know, if it's true that they really can't make the payments, they do have some options to consider. One is that, you know, again, they can talk to the lender and they can talk about some short-term solutions, such as a plan where they pay less than they're currently paying. The lender might temporarily reduce the interest or other fees involved to try to make the payment a little more affordable. Another one is they could talk about putting the house on the market and seeing what the lender will do for them. Sometimes lenders, if they think that your house has a good chance of selling, might be willing to give some financial assistance or waive some payments while you're in that process to try to help that process along. So that's a possibility. If there's some financial hardship and it's a documented hardship, for example, if you mentioned that you know, there might be some income that's reduced or something else that you can show, there's actually a federal program now that lenders can take advantage of which will reduce that monthly payment for up to 5 years called Making Home Affordable. So that's another option that's on the table. There are a number of options depending on the situation the borrowers are in.
What's the Making Home Affordable? Where would you go to find out about that?
There's actually a website, makinghomeaffordable.gov. This is part of the stimulus package. And the stimulus package was passed in February. In March, they came out with the Making Home Affordable program. And this, for people who are can document hardship of some kind, so income loss, job loss, you know, income cutback, something like that, they can actually get a reduction in their interest or reduction in the principal for up to 5 years. And the federal government is matching what the lender does to try to make that happen. So there's some incentives on the table for lenders to do this. It's just rolling out, so some lenders have been very slow to implement this, but it's a possibility for some folks.
Great. I'll check out that website. Thank you so much.
Good
luck. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, that's probably good news to a lot of people who are listening in today. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't hear some more about that from callers. Joe in Ashland, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to bring up a point. I did away with all my credit cards, and I started dealing solely with our local credit unions. And they have managed to, well, number one, help me out with getting rid of all my credit card debt, reconsolidating my student loans, and getting me on a much better path. And I was wondering if you had any other advice on how to make the most out of that tool.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that story a lot lately of people who've used, you know, traditional banks, whatever you want to call them, and moved to a local institution, sometimes a credit union, sometimes a local bank of some kind, and just found, wow, this is a lot better customer service. Wow, they're a lot more in touch with what my needs are and really work with me more. I think that's very true. You know, a number of credit unions actually have people whose job is to help you with issues like credit and issues of dealing with loans and trying to reconsolidate your debt. So it's not an uncommon story to hear those kinds of services out there. You know, the key is always just to try to find the best solution for you. And so if, you know, getting rid of your credit cards altogether helps you feel more in control and helps you have, you know, more financial security, I think that's a great option. And it's great that they were able to help you do that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And it sounds like Joe's doing pretty much what he needs to be doing. He wondered if there was more that he could be doing in a situation. You know, would there be more? I mean, what about? I wonder if he's saving any money for.
Yeah, well, that's the next step. You know, for most people, the first step is to try to get control of their debt. You know, when you can save and make, if you're lucky, 4 or 5% right now, versus paying off a credit card at 18%,
yeah,
it's a much better
off,
deal. Pay off that credit card debt. You know, I think his situation is a good one. I mean, some people have a real hard time realizing that they just can't manage credit cards, and they're better off without them. And you know, if you can get to that point and get rid of them, it's going to save you down the road from ever going, you know, getting tempted by that credit card again.
Years ago, I finally decided I was going to pay. I was never going to run a balance. And I, after running a balance in my youth for many years,
that's right,
you start adding up how much that interest is costing you. And so some months it hurts a bit to have to pay it off, but we've throughout our entire marriage, we've never run a balance on a card. So.
It's, you know, it's good to give yourself some rules, you know, and if your rule is I never, ever carry a balance, you won't do it. And if your rule is sometimes I will, then you can get trapped and then you'll always be paying it and then paying interest on interest, which is the worst of all.
That's so. The worst of all. Don in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hey, just real quick on the last guy. Isn't it true that credit unions are, like, legally only allowed to charge a certain amount, where banks can charge, like, really a lot of interest, but credit unions, because of some laws that let them do lending back then there's like a limit on how much they can charge. But what I was going to talk about was I did get it. I had my liver failed and I was disabled for a while, and I called up my creditors and told them that my credit card people, and told them that I wasn't going to be able to pay because I was out of work and probably going to be out of work for some time. And they made me an offer that if I would pay off my, they said, well, you know, we'll knock, it was $3,000 off of the balance or something like that, if I would pay it off, like, right away. And I was in no position to pay it off at that point. And I called back later when I was in a little bit better position, and they said, yeah, I'd like to do that. And they went, oh, well, now we're only going to give you, like, $800 off. And it's like, they definitely, you sort of want to, if you're going to do that, call in and, you know, ask for a deal. You sort of want to be prepared and have your ducks in line. I don't know if they're still doing that, but if things, because I got that from two different creditors, where the first time I called in, they made me a pretty generous offer, and the next time, not so much.
Yeah. Yep. That's I really appreciate you sharing that story, because it's very true. I mean, you do have to be prepared. I talk to people who say, well, I called my creditor. It was over lunch in the car, you know, on my cell phone. And, you know, you got to really think about this as a negotiation. Make sure you have all, as you say, all your ducks in a row, all your paperwork together, know how much you're bringing in, know how much you can afford to pay, how much you owe. And they can really cut some deals with you. Remember, a lot of what you're talking about is interest and fees.
My biggest creditor.
Yeah.
How much was it?
$10,000. I owed them like $15,000, and they knocked it down to $5,000.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, because remember, a lot of that is just interest and fees. You know, it's just it's not the exertional principle. So.
Well, thanks. Thank you, Don, for sharing that. Appreciate it. Michael Collins, our guest today, Extension Family Living Consumer Economics Specialist in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison, our guest as we talk about managing your personal finances in these tough economic times. Want to join in with your question or your experience? We'd love to hear from you. The number, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Michael Collins, our guest from the UW School of Human Ecology, as we talk about managing your personal finances. Mark in Colfax up next. Mark, hello to you.
Hello. We got ourselves in quite a bit of a problem with a lot of credit card debt due to, you know, healthcare things and car loans put on there and whatnot with balance transfers. But we were making progress, but sometimes we end up in having to use the overdraft account with our bank account, which has a 23% interest rate.
Ooh.
And so I went to the local U.S. bank branch and sat down with the manager there, asking if there wasn't some other vehicle that I could use which would give me a better interest rate when I need to use that. They suggested a home equity line of credit, which would be 5%.
Yeah.
So they go and they fill out everything. Now, keep in mind, I refinanced our home in 2004, and they said it was worth $105,000. So they put everything in and came back and said, well, you have too high a balance of credit card debt, so we can't do it on this loan, but we have another program where we can give you a line of credit at 9.5% instead of 5%.
Yeah.
So I said, well, that's better than 23%. Let's go and do that. Well, then I get contacted from somebody in Ohio that says, well, we don't have an appraisal on your home. I said, well, you told me it was worth $105,000 in 2004. They said, well, we'll do an appraisal for $195. I said, well, okay, and had to give them my checking account number so they could take it out. Well, a week later, they took out $260. I said, what's going on here? And they never gave me an explanation. Several weeks later, I finally got a letter from them saying that your house is only worth $75,000, so we can't give you a line of credit. And I'm out $260, and they said, we're not going to do anything for you.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you've highlighted so many issues in that story. Yeah. You know, so one is the issue of the bank and how they're dealing with you. I mean, what you're getting today is banks in general are very, we call, risk averse. They just are not lending like they used to. And so where in the old days, they pretty much would give anybody a loan. Now they're being extremely stingy and following the letter of every regulation that they have. And the second thing you realize is that bank is now working with an entity in Ohio and, you know, all over the place. And that's very common in the mortgage market today. You've got, you know, you might pick up the phone and call your lender and it's actually somebody sitting in India. You know, it's a huge network of different of institutions that are involved in any particular loan. And oftentimes you get these issues where just nobody's really paying attention to the details. You know, there's a simple thing, an automated appraisal, and there's a form of this if you're familiar with the website Zillow, where you can figure out what your house might be worth today to try to figure out whether you might have any equity there. And banks have access to these automated appraisal systems, and they could probably give you a ballpark estimate if there would have been, you know, they were certainly pretty far off in your case. And it's a shame that they charged all those fees. You could go back to that bank manager because you sat down with him in the beginning and try to make a case for this. If they want to keep you as a customer, they ought to do that.
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely go back. If you were told $190 and then they took $260, I would be calling the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection hotline and filing a complaint, to be perfectly honest.
I think I will, because I do have the actual emails from the person in Ohio.
If you've got that,
stating how much it was, and then asking them why it changed, and never getting an answer from them.
Yeah.
Yep. I would definitely pursue that. You might start with the manager, and then if you don't get satisfaction, definitely escalate it up to the state.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Annie in La Crosse. Your turn now. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Say the first mistake I made several years ago was refinancing with Countrywide. And, of course, they're owned by Bank of America now.
That's right.
And so I called them, and we talked about that economic stimulus, you know, debt reduction thing with my mortgage rates and all that, and went through all the stuff. And basically, because I'm needy, it's not good for me. I'm too needy. I don't have enough money to qualify.
Oh.
And did you know, because they were talking about this on the program previous, but I got a letter from my insurance company saying, if your credit rate was better, you'd be getting a lower rate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm thinking of calling them and finding out what that is and just paying that. I'm getting a little perturbed.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden everything has to do with our credit rating, but this whole stimulus package and supposedly helping people, if I had the money they think I should have in order to be able to get the package, I wouldn't need it.
Yeah,
well, several points here. You know, first on this bigger issue of credit, you're exactly right. Our credit scores employers are checking our credit scores now, and when they go to hire people, insurance companies are, auto, you know, life, you name it. So credit is more and more important. It's not that it suddenly become more important. It's that, you know, frankly, the financial industry was pretty lax about paying attention to it for a period there, and so we sort of all got sucked into that too. In terms of the issue of your loan with Countrywide and the refinance and the programs that are out there, you know, I would say a couple of things on this. One is that this is an ever-changing environment. You know, Countrywide, because they've been taken over by Bank of America, they're changing a lot of their processes and their people. They're still implementing the Making Home Affordable program. There are other aspects of Making Home Affordable which aren't as contingent on having a regular income, and I think that's probably what your lender was telling you, is that your income either wasn't enough or wasn't regular enough that they couldn't do the modification on it. So there may be other programs that are available. The Making Home Affordable website might be one, the Making of HomeAffordable.gov website. The Countrywide website may also have some tools you want to look at before you talk to the lender again, but it's probably worth another call. And I think the hard thing for some folks is eventually they may just have to realize that I need to figure out a solution which may involve me selling this house. And you certainly want to look at selling the house before you look at losing the house in foreclosure, because that is a sort of the worst possible outcome you can think about.
Yeah.
Right. My son moved in with me. and he's helping me out. And, you know, he's 33, and we get along, and I don't see, at this point in our financial situations, even country, throughout the country, why does everybody have to have their own little apartment paying double everything? So I think other people should think about that. I mean, it's working out pretty well.
It's a good point, and actually what some credit counselors are suggesting to people is, could you take in a boarder, whether that's a relative or not, to try to make these things work.
Right. Sort of. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling, and appreciate it. Gina emailed and wonders if credit consolidation is something she should pursue to help her situation. So consolidating those probably credit cards, but could be other things too. And will it show up on my credit report is her other part of her question.
There are a lot of different flavors of credit cleanup or credit consolidation that are out there. You know, the sort of classic form of it is where you actually work with a counseling agency and they look at all the various consumer credit you have. Typically, we're talking about credit cards here, and try to negotiate an amount that you can pay off and a time frame, usually, you know, 2 or 3 years to pay it off. If that involves relieving some debt, in other words, forgiving some debt, that definitely shows up on your credit report. Okay. You know, so that there are those kinds of situations do show up in your credit report. Now, what you have to ask yourself is what is the alternative? If my other alternative is I default on some of these, you know, and then I have negative judgments or deficiencies or those kinds of things on my credit report, that could be even worse. So, you know, if this is the best you can do, then it's certainly something worth thinking about. It's good to ask a lot of questions and make sure, again, you have all your ducks in a row and all your paperwork and really know where you're at.
And what is considered a good number on your credit for your credit report? There's like four agencies, I think. And what do they go up to, 700 or something, or 800, is it? I don't remember now.
Yeah, there's two separate issues. One is the credit bureaus. And so they track all those payments you're making to creditors. So creditors report when you make a payment or don't make a payment and if you made a partial payment or not. So those are three big credit bureaus. There's a fourth that's smaller, but there's, you know, three big ones. Those credit reports, which include, you know, for some people, hundreds of lines of information about every payment they've had and all their open accounts, those feed into something called a credit score. The one you've probably heard of is FICO, F-I-C-O, the Fair Isaacs Corporation score. Those run from, you know, and, you know, for most people in the 400 or 500s up to around 800 or so. You know, we used to say that 680 was the magic cutoff, and then as the credit crunch started, we said 720, and now we're saying 750. I've even heard some lenders saying they're looking for 780. I mean, these are really high levels.
Good grief.
So, you know, the rule of thumb is now definitely in the 700s, depending on what you're looking for. And, you know, the things that really affect the score are paying on time. I mean, that's the most important thing to do is pay on time. You know, the second most important thing to do is look at how much you're borrowing. If you borrow, if you have a large debt, that's going to hurt typically your credit score as well.
So how much you owe and how regularly you pay?
Regularly you pay is the most important thing. Pay on time, pay on time, pay on time. The next thing is to pay down your debt. The less that you, especially let's say you have a total of $50,000 available on your cards. If you were to max out all your cards, you'd have $50,000. You don't want to spend much more than, say, $10,000 or $20,000. I mean, the credit card companies want to see a big cushion there. And that's what suggests is you're a good credit card user and that, you know, if you did run into a bad time, you aren't going to max out your cards. That's what they're really searching for.
All right, let's go to Elizabeth. And again, you can get those free if you want to take a look.
Yeah, well, this is another thing to be careful. If you see the ads on TV and commercial radio, as you said before, for these free credit report sites, those may or may not be the actual free credit report sites. AnnualCreditReport.com is the official government website.
AnnualCreditReport.com.
That's right. And there you can get one from each bureau each year. So that means you can basically pull your credit three times a year. You know, you go to each bureau once a year. So three times a year you can check your credit for free. You should never have to pay for this. You should never have to give a credit card number. You should never have to sign up for a monthly fee or annual fee or anything else. So be really careful when you look at those sites.
Let's go to Elizabeth in Madison now. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. I was calling because a few years ago we had kind of a tough time, and we were able to make our payments, but my husband and I both have student loans, so we extended out those payments pretty far to lower the payment down. And we refinanced our house, but things are, getting better now, and so we could potentially, we're saving some for retirement. We could potentially pay more on the house or more on the student loans, and I just wondered what your thoughts are on how to organize that.
Yeah.
It's a great question. I probably can't give you the answer that's right for you, but I can maybe help you think about some of the issues to think about. You know, I never want to say just pay off debt and don't save for retirement, especially if you're relatively young. Getting that compounding on your retirement is really important. But if you do already have some retirement savings in place, or if you're part of a defined pension and you know there's going to be money there in retirement, paying off some of your debt's probably not a bad idea. Whether you pay off the student loan or the home debt first, I think what I would do is look at the interest rate and the fees on both, look at how much longer you have to pay on each of those, and start to figure out which one you want to start paying off first. The two types of debt you mentioned, the student loan debt and the housing debt, you know, a lot of times financial planners will call those good debt. You know, that's the kind of debt that it's okay to carry, and some people even carry some of that into retirement. So, you know, relative to paying off a credit card loan or an auto loan or something else, you know, those aren't debts that you should feel too terrible about continuing on with.
Do you have any ideas about resources I might check to get more information?
Well, in terms of the student loan and the current mortgage loan you have, try to figure out exactly what your rates are, if they're going to change or not, what they're indexed to, in other words, what interest rate they're going to change with, and try to look at that real closely. And then check on some of the financial websites. You know, there's a bunch of them out there, so I don't want to mention anyone specifically, but and figure out what sort of typical rates are, particularly on the mortgage side, to see if you think you have a rate that's good right now. If you feel like the rate's pretty good and you don't feel like there's any point in trying to refinance or maybe get a shorter term loan, especially on the mortgage, you know, you probably are just best off sort of staying where you're at, making some additional payments here and there. One strategy that people will do is, say, at tax time, take their tax refund. If they get a refund, use that to pay off their mortgage. Or make an extra payment every once in a while. Try to save up and maybe once a year make an extra payment. So those are some strategies you can look at.
And if you've got, you know, if you've got, say, 15 years on your house but only a couple years on your student loan, my own vision on that is get the one paid off. and then, you know, you've got some money you can put away, maybe save a little bit.
That's right. That's right. You know, one of the things that the mistake people make sometimes is they will be pretty close to the end of a loan and then they'll refinance it. So let's say you had a 30-year loan, you only have 10 years left, and then you just refinance it into a 15-year loan or a 30-year loan, even worse. And, you know, most of these loans, the first few years, you're just paying interest. So you're oftentimes better not refinancing and just, you know, as you say, paying off or, you know, trying to pay ahead a little bit.
Yeah. Thanks, Elizabeth, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jeff in Milwaukee will give you a chance now. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, it's actually more a question pertaining to my mother. My father passed away a few months ago, and she was under the impression during his final years that things would be a certain way financially. She would receive his pension when he died, and that's not the case. And now she's left with you know, quite a few bills, including a mortgage that I have been trying to work with the bank to get reduced, because the interest rate, she thought it was great. Turns out it's not so hot. And I'm kind of, you know, we're in that boat. I kind of heard someone a moment ago was similar. You know, do you just let it go into foreclosure, try to sell it, try to figure out a way to make it more affordable? There's probably a few things I could add to it to fill in some blanks, but...
Yeah, well, you know, there are actually a surprisingly large number of seniors who are not in an unfamiliar situation to what you're talking about here, where they've got reduced income, especially if the spouse passed away, and they still have a mortgage. It's one of the reasons a lot of financial planners talk about not having a mortgage in retirement, because there is this risk that things could go wrong. But there are some potential solutions. You know, as you say, you've got an issue here clearly where there's a reduction in income, there's a documented hardship. This might be the kind of thing that would be eligible for some of the programs that are out there right now.
So the makinghomeaffordable.gov?
That's one option to think about.
See, I have looked into that, actually, and one thing I've been told, actually this was by the bank that told me, not necessarily through them, but they said it was through this program. They said the reason why my mom wouldn't be eligible was because the people needing the mortgage had changed. It was my mom and dad on the mortgage, and now it would be just her. And they said they will only do that if both people on the mortgage are applying for it. It seems a little fishy to me.
Yeah, yeah, I would push back on that. I mean, certainly there's a case there where you couldn't have both parties involved. You know, the other thing I want to talk about, I know we're out of time too, but a quick thing to think about when you're dealing with somebody who's older is something called a reverse mortgage or a home equity conversion mortgage.
And I thought about that, and I'm not trying to cut you off, but when my brother and I found out, they owe way more on the house than they ever did.
Okay.
I don't quite know. My dad had a lot of medical expenses, stuff like that.
Yep.
I mean, and so there's really not the equity there for that either.
Right. That's too bad. I mean, that can be a good tool if it's used carefully. And just so people know, that's a case where you can actually change your home basically into an annuity to pay off some debt if you're older, and then the estate doesn't get the house, the bank does. Well, you know, I think it's a situation too where you have to talk to your mother about how long she wants to stay in that house and whether staying in that house is important. Because you know, trying to work out a solution where you sell the house with the bank might be a better way to go. Oftentimes they will think about things, sometimes we call them a short sale, where they'll accept less than the amount owed. So if you can say, let's say the loan is $100,000, you can only sell it for $90,000, they might be willing to accept that as a payoff for the loan as a short sale. So there are a lot of options
credit?
You can talk about.
Would that affect your credit? Is that your question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it would show up as debt forgiveness. There's you want to be careful about the tax implications of that. Although that's most of the banks now are familiar with that and can guide you through that process. It's far better than a foreclosure. Foreclosure sticks on the credit report for 7 to 10 years. So you want to try to avoid that foreclosure filing if at all possible.
One last thing I just wanted to ask, but
sure.
For this making homes affordable information, it's a much better idea to go to this website than it is to the bank. In this case, it's Bank of America, because they tell me one thing, and then it's a completely different answer when it comes right down to, okay, well, we can move forward on this. Then all of a sudden, there's all sorts of stuff that says, well, this won't work. So makinghomesaffordable.gov or .com is the way to go?
Makinghomeaffordable.gov. It's
part
of the federal response on this issue. And I'm certainly not going to defend any of the financial institutions out there. But, they're big institutions, and they're not used to turning on a dime. And they've had a tough year. So building up their staff training and capacity on this program has been, just atrociously slow. There's been a number of big news articles about this issue. You may get terrible service one day and good service the next. So it's something you just got to kind of keep after.
All right. Well, I thank you very much. I will definitely look at that.
Good luck.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And I'll just take one more call here. Sam, hi. From Brooklyn.
Sir, how are you doing?
Good.
I have a question. At this point, I mean, I owe a lot of money in credit card debt, and I had people give me a call saying that I'll be able to pay it all off in only a third of what I owe. But at the end of the day, I'm not getting over my debt because it comes off at a settlement and I never really paid it in full. Why should I pay off a whole percentage of it and not be considered paid it in full if I can, wait it all out until I have more money and things settle down and then pay it off, however it goes, and not have a settlement but have it paid in full?
Yeah, so it's a situation a lot of people find themselves in. Should I take this deal, pay less than the amount? It goes on my credit report. It remains this issue that's going to nag at me for a while, or should I try to stick it out? And it really depends upon your situation and how bad you think things are. If you think this is the best you can do, that there's no way you're ever going to be able to dig out from this, then your best bet probably is to take the deal, recognize it's going to hurt your credit for a couple of years, but that you'll get through it. If you think this is something I can get through, I can come up with a plan and I can stick to it and I have the self-discipline to make that happen, you certainly could try to do it yourself and try to grind it out. But remember, a lot of what you're paying is interest on interest, interest on fees, a lot of fluff from a lot of people's perspective. And sometimes the lender is more than happy to get rid of that and forgive some of that if they can just get a payment.
Thank you very much for calling in. Michael, thank you. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Thanks for the calls.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate you being with us today as well. Michael Collins, Extension Family Living Consumer Economics Specialist. He's also an assistant professor in the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. Welcome back, and we'll do this again. Lots of good questions there. So we talked a little about getting your financial house in order. Let's talk about getting your physical house in order next. Dustin Maher, a personal trainer, coming on to be with us next to talk about your physical fitness here on the Ideas Network.